Hello and welcome to another Stay Connected podcast in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. I'm Lee Hatcher. Sad journo that I am, I'm following this worldwide crisis around the clock, and yet I still haven't heard a coherent sketch of what lies ahead of us. Of course, there are good reasons for that. We don't know precisely what's going to be happening in the coming months, year, or years. But if you take away the timeline, and as you'll hear, timelines aren't helpful, there are stages that will unfold from now. I'm in a Zoom conversation with Lynn Worsley, director and founder of the Resilience Centre, who sketches out those stages, the brutal facts of what lies ahead, based on a quite remarkable story emerging from the Vietnam War, of all places. This is at times a confronting conversation, yet all the time looking ahead with hope.
In the weeks and months ahead, we need to be drawing back on the research from the resilience research that we've got. And part of that research looks at some of the retrospective accounts that people have had. And one in particular, I think we need to draw on. This one is the Stockdale effect. So Google that if you want to. Okay. But the Stockdale effect basically was a guy, Colonel Stockdale, who was in the Vietnam War with a whole lot of prisoners during the Vietnam War. And so what he was doing was actually keeping his men sane. Now, interestingly, during that time, most people came out of the Hanoi prison insane, except for his group.
Wow.
Except for his group. They were not. None of them even had post-traumatic stress, and all of them just thrived when they came out of the prison. So we need to look at this study very much in detail. I use this study over and over again, and those people who have seen me when they're going through crises will know that I talk about the Stockdale effect all the time.
Okay.
One of the key things that he did was that he said to them, oh, no one in our group is allowed to say it'll be over in a couple of weeks or we'll be rescued in a couple of months. Don't, we'll be out by September or we'll be out by fall. He said no one was allowed to say that.
No timing.
No timing. Because the moment they started putting the timing in, as soon as that month came past, then it didn't happen, then they felt let down.
Yep.
And they took too much time to get back up on track again. So what he said was that every single person in our group is going to say, before we go to sleep, what will you be doing when we are released? When this is all over, what will we be doing?
Even if it's years down the track.
Even if it's years down the track.
Yeah.
He then said, let's face the brutal facts. We're here. We've got solitary confinement at times, a bit like us now, and we've got situations where we're going to be tortured. I'm not sure we're going to have that, but some of it will seem like torture.
Yeah.
And so he said what we need to do is practice how we survive those situations and come up with strategies that help us through the solitary confinement. And so he used every opportunity when they weren't in the solitary confinement to practice skills that they would do when they were. Now, this is really good for us right now.
Yes.
Because we need to practice some of these strategies. And so what I've done is I've put together a little bit of a graph that we can see from what China has been through, what Italy's going through, and what Spain's going through.
Okay.
I've divided up the graphs into five stages. I've had a look at what are the brutal facts that we will be going through at each of those stages, given that we've got other countries before us.
Can I ask you this question? Why the brutal facts now? Some people might think, why can't we be more positive or optimistic? Think the best ahead.
Yeah. Well, in actual fact, this is optimistic. Optimistic is not just thinking the best.
Okay.
Optimistic is facing the brutal facts and thinking about the best case scenario in the brutal facts.
Okay.
So it's almost like saying, let's think of the worst case scenario and let's put the best case scenario in that situation.
Okay.
And in the graph, I've divided it up into five stages. In stage one, we have just a little bit of few cases, not very many per capita, probably, you know, less than 1%. And that starts to gradually go up. Now, during that stage, we will call that the preparation stage. And in stage two, we have a massive incline of infections. In stage three, we have a sort of a leveling off, the same amount of cases in there in place. And in stage three, we will call that the death stage, where we hear a lot of people dying. And in stage four, we start to see a little bit of recovery, but in that stage, we have more death.
Okay.
So it's recovery and death. So we don't have new infections, but those people who are infected will be dying. And then there's this final stage five where we have recovery and rebuild. When we look at this, we look at stage one. And the first sign of stage one is that we prepare. And this is what our government are doing. We're all starting to prepare. We're starting to say, oh, we should shut down. Or maybe we shouldn't shut down. We should shut down our schools. We shouldn't shut down our
schools. It's a stage kind of
thing. It's all about that.
Yeah,
it's the stage of getting prepared. And interestingly, everyone's reaction to that stage is either denial or panic. Or maybe we do a bit of both just in case.
Which
we've
seen.
Yeah. But we'll still go to the beach. You know, we're not quite sure whether it's really going to happen. And I'm so young and I'm not going to get it. And I'm healthy and I'm not going to get it, blah, blah, blah. In that stage, and I'm going to come back to what proaction we can do. I'll just talk about what our signs are and what our reactions are. In stage two is where the infection is starting to spread. And in stage two, you have a panic and a fear because all of a sudden we can't deny it anymore.
Yeah.
We can't stick our head in the sand. It's actually going to happen. We're starting to lose jobs. We're starting to panic because we're losing jobs, but we're also panicking because we might get infected. And we're having difficulties with connecting with each other. The third stage is where you start to see a lot of sickness and a lot of death. And it is where all of us start to have someone we love, someone we know is dying or sick or both. So we need to have a period of time there where our own reaction is to deal with our own sickness because a lot of us will get this.
Yes.
The fourth stage, interestingly, as the scale goes down or the graph starts to go down, we are seeing an increase in deaths. And this is happening in Italy. And in Italy, they're actually starting to sort of level out a bit. And in the leveling out and the dropping down, they're still having people die. And the same thing happened in China, although China is a bit further on than this now.
Yes, yes.
But during this stage, we're going to have an outpouring of grief. And I think, too, grief and anger, because in those stages, if you're not able to have a funeral or bury someone that you love or say what you need to say, people get angry inside because they haven't got any way of pouring that out. And the fifth stage we see is recovery. And in that recovery or rehabilitation, we're starting to get better, but our reaction is we're absolutely exhausted.
I can imagine that.
These are brutal facts.
Yeah.
This is the facts of what we're going to have to deal with and how we need to be prepared for
that. Okay, so tell me.
So in our preparing stage, in order to be proactive, we need to set together new systems. And psychologically, the implications for us if we're going to do really well at this is that we set up systems in our homes and in our workplaces, and we set up systems so that we can continue to operate. But what's really important in this stage is that we plan ahead. We plan ahead for stage five. We might plan ahead to get through stage two, three, and four, but if we plan ahead to stage five, we're doing what Stockdale did and saying, what will you be doing when it finishes?
So in the meantime, we are facing the brutal facts of this all the way through, but looking towards an end.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it may be acknowledging that when things start to hang down, there's going to be a lot of exhausted people. What are we going to do with that? How are we going to respond to that when there's exhausted people? What sort of things are we going to be able to do that would be helpful in that situation? How are we going to input into our communities? How are we going to put into our workplaces? Our economy is going to be affected. But in that time, we may be dealing with poverty. How do we deal with that? How will we set up systems that actually mean that during those poverty stages, that we're actually able to be effective and have an effect, okay? Before I leave stage one, the proaction here is to create connections. Connections that will see us through all of these stages. And if we create the connections, we'll stay resilient.
With others?
And the connections made with others.
Yeah.
And they need to be, if we look at the resilience donut, and for those of you who are interested about that, I can talk about that at another time. But the resilience donut would say you need three areas of connected all at the one time. Now, this is meaning we're cutting off. So how do we connect creatively? And in that, we have the connections established by our new routine. And in stage two, we have panic and fear. But our proaction here is to use the systems that we've set up and to connect with others regularly within the systems. We also need to practice healthy routines. So for those of us who can't go to the gym, we may not be allowed to go walking in the park, but it might be that we set up our own home gym and we have all these fun activities at home that we can do. But we also need to enter psychologically into a no blame and shame approach. The moment we do blame and shame, we are expecting other people to look after us. Okay. The moment we start blaming the government or the prime minister or the politicians or anyone that's supposed to be telling us what to do, we then take the agency away from ourselves and we point the finger.
So we kind of lose control of ourselves in a way by blaming someone else. Okay.
The moment you start blaming and shaming and pointing the finger, you take the control away from yourself. And psychologically, you put yourselves, even though you're blaming them, into the hands of the person you're blaming.
Interesting. Because that'll be really tempting in the weeks and months ahead.
Exactly. Yep. Because everyone wants to blame and shame.
Yep.
But blame and shame psychologically is very bad for our psyche because it points the finger and it says someone else is in control. And in stage two, we have to take control of our own health and the people around us, and we have to work out how to connect with others and practice healthy routines in order to get through that stage.
Yeah.
Because we will be continually getting infections and people around us will be dropping.
Which brings us to stage three.
Stage three. And in stage three is the hard one. And four. I don't know if any of them are easy, to be honest.
No.
But stage three, the reality hits because either we're sick ourselves or someone in our household is sick or someone next door is sick or someone in our family is sick. And we're having to be worried and concerned about them. We can't go and visit them. We have a moral dilemma. The moral dilemma is if I visit them and care for them, I will get sick. Do I take the dilemma and go and visit and care for them and put myself at risk? Or do I leave them to die?
You got an answer to that?
No, but it's been done before. And this is how Florence Nightingale started. She put herself out on the limb. This is how many nurses have to deal with this. And our nurses and our doctors are dealing with it all the time.
Yes, yes.
And this moral dilemma, we need to be able to have debates around that and think about no judgment and no blame and shame, but enable each other to do what we need to do and make our choices, because we're going to have moral choices that we have to make.
And be prepared to grieve.
And at this point, we're going to be in a place of grieving. And there's stages of grief, which I can talk about at another time, but there is an impending grief stage. It's something going to happen and I'm grieving already for it. And that may be happening as well. Stage four. Are we ready for stage four, Lee?
I dread this. Yeah, I know.
This is awful. But what we need to be thinking through is that how do we psychologically respond to each of these stages and the brutal facts? In stage four, as we start to have less and less infections, we will have more and more deaths, because while that's the infections are decreasing, the 14-day cycle of the virus, of those who are in intensive care, some of them will pass away during that time. So we'll have less infections and more deaths. So what will happen then is we're going to be faced with funerals that we can't attend, memorials that we can't put in place. We need to have a way that we will show respectful care and concern. We need to be able to be proactive in that, because if we don't do that, many people who've lost someone have had a sense of being alone, not just losing someone, but in their own grief. So in our churches, in our mosques, in our own workplaces, to even have some sort of thought of how are we going to cope with people who are going through this grief? How are we going to show some care and concern? And again, own it. When you can do something psychologically, it's helpful. The moment you ask everybody else to do it for you, it's never going to be good enough.
I think that's a critical part of this conversation, actually.
And this is why, again, no blame, no shame. where there's blame and there's shame, they happen together. And at stage four, we have to go in actively and going, I'm not blaming and I'm not shaming. I'm just going to do what I can. And sometimes that's not going to be good enough, but I'm going to do what I can.
Take me to stage five, quick.
Okay, stage five. Now, remember, we've prepared for this in stage one. We've prepared for what we will be doing.
Yes.
And in stage five, the people around us will be exhausted and we will be exhausted. And at this point, we need to start preparing to build again. But what we can do the best is that during stage two, three, and four, we have established new connections with people. And we need to treasure those connections because we will not be in a position to buy and sell because we will pretty much all be in poverty. But we will be in a position to share and barter. And if we share and barter, the more connections we've got, the better we are.
This all is pretty scary, pretty coherent, though. Are you scared much by this? Is there much fear in your heart about where we're
headed? I have fear. Yeah. Yes, I have fear. I have a faith. I hold on to my faith. But I also hold on to the faith of my forefathers and see what they did in the past. And I look ahead and I think, okay, this is an opportunity in the process of absolute adversity. And this is what resilience is about. And it's my life work is to actually study resilience. When I study resilience, I think this is almost like this life work of studying is coming to this point where we, you know what, we pull it all together and have a look. How do we apply this? How do we put this practically in action right now? And how can I help other people around who haven't studied it all their life to see how it practically can apply? And that makes me feel like I can do something.
And it's changed many, many lives, I know, for the better. And at the moment and in perhaps the next couple of years ahead, it'll be a great gift to many. Lynn Worsley, thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thanks, Lee.
You've been listening to another Stay Connected podcast from the Resilience Centre. I'm Lee Hatcher. Head to the website for more podcasts in this series and so many great resources, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.